Hi there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here today with Linda Vanella. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Unless you think that what we do is just off the cuff, we decided to dig in a little further into these alter personalities and the many personalities. And I must say that we received more response to the two programs last week about the many different selves than we had received in a very long time. So obviously people liked it and had many ideas about it. But it begs one giant question. If we have many different selves that do many different things, whether they are integrated is one personality having just parts of their personality, or, as I speculate, that they're actual alter personalities, which is part of what I said last week, which is, for example, your addictive self, the part of you that gets into an addiction or a compulsion, I claim is not you. It's my thought is, hey, let's treat that as if it's not you, but some other person who looks like you, and that the only way we're going to beat this is by setting up negotiations with that person as opposed to just trying to control yourself. Because it's not yourself that's doing the addiction. It's not yourself who's doing the drinking, who's smoking the cigarette. It's the other guy or gal. And with them, you have to make a deal. I remember the big cigarette deal I made once. It was a great cigarette deal. I had to talk to the cigarette smoker in me. And I remember specifically saying, oh, I know how much you're going to miss this. And one of the things I did was I talked about how a cigarette is like the only true form of love. If you feel bad, what you do is you grab for it. It makes you feel better right away. If you get angry, it calms you down. It's in your power completely, and when you're done with it, you can throw it away. You know, just like you can't really do with people. Well, having a long recognition, acknowledgement of this other self really helped me in being able to make the deal. And, of course, I stopped smoking. Now let's look at what the alternative is. Instead of all these different selves that we develop, comes this big question that may sound trite, but dig in with me, friends. What is the real self? Now, we're told by therapists or people who sell psychotherapy, social workers, psychologists, will say to you, you've got to learn to function from your real self rather than your false self. And that we continuously betray our real selves, and we're encouraged to identify our real self and live by it. Wives very often criticize their husbands because they see their husbands positioning themselves and being outside of themselves, so the wives will criticize men, and men talk about how criticized they feel because they're not being their real self. The problem is, what is the real self, number one? But that's not the only problem. The second question I ask, as we ask questions here all the time, is should you be your real self? Does your real self have any value? What's good about the real self? Who is the real self? Well, in this investigation, we're going to look at love first. Love. Let's look at love. Well, no, wait a minute. In asking this question, Linda, who is the real self?
Well, let's look at the authentic self.
That's one definition that people have called it. They've said, yes, it's your authentic self. Does that make it feel different?
Or how about the honest self?
Well, I kind of believe in that one. I kind of believe that the end of the road, what we look for, is that we can be honest everywhere as opposed to dishonest. Now, what does dishonest mean? Dishonest means every position you take that's a little bit of a lie. And that eventually you live by the truth. But just the fact that you live by the truth as opposed to living by fabrications doesn't necessarily mean we're going to a real self. I know a lot of honest people who aren't real at all.
Armand, how about the loving self being the only true essence?
I have a question about that. Because we're in love. First of all, let's mention that there is also the natural self. People call it that. There's the natural feeling self. And then some other people call it the inner self, as opposed to the outer self. But now you bring up this question about the loving self. Is the loving self the real self? Because in theory, if we function from the real self, or whatever we do is supposedly feeding the real self versus the outer self, therefore, we're going to be better off.
Well, for example, Armand, you go to a party. You have a few drinks.
Ooh.
Well, I do.
Okay.
I go to a party. I have a few drinks. I become the life of the party. People laugh at my jokes. They remark about how pretty I am. And I may enjoy the comments, but how satisfying do I really feel at the end of that evening by those comments?
Because those comments are related to how you were performing.
I was performing and not really being my true self. Was that my true self?
Well, here we go again to that question. I want to make sure we don't overuse that. Is it really satisfying? But on the other hand, you go to the party and you say you're going to be your real self, quotes. And so what you do, someone shows up who's wearing no makeup, because we know makeup is masquerade, right? We know that. And you don't laugh at bad jokes. You just sit there with a long face when somebody tells some kind of a joke. And if people tell some kind of a joke that in some ways in poor taste, you grimace, right? And you kind of show a seriousness if that's how you feel. And everybody ignores you. Is that your real self? That's an interesting question. Who pays attention to you? Why'd you go to the party? So let's ask the question about love, your loving self. Now, this is, I think, one of the best questions we could ask. I think investigating love and the way we love would help you in finding this, because here's my guess. My guess is today in this program, we should decide whether real self has any value or not. It's been an assumption of mine for so many years. Yes, you have to be real. You got to be real. You got to be real. But, you know, everything's worth a question, and this one's worth a question. Since there are so few, quote, authentic people walking around, maybe the rest of them know something. Maybe it doesn't pay. You know, maybe you don't belong on this planet if you're going to be real. Now, I know some of you are already saying, oh, wait, no, you have to fight to be. That's why I got a divorce, so I could be my real self, sitting alone here watching television or listening to the radio. That's why I did so many things that may have been poor choices, because I was feeding, quote, my real self. Well, I'm not so sure. Let's look at love. Let's kind of examine love. There's one absolutely agreed upon truth about love. Aren't you excited about what I'm going to say? There's one absolutely agreed upon truth about love, which is whenever you say to someone, I love you, you can easily substitute the words, I love how I feel when I'm with you. Because that's true. What's true is I love you means I feel this gush of a feeling when I regard you. And I love that gush of a feeling. And as I regard you, as I look at you and I think about you, it's you that gives me this gush of a feeling. So my absolute truth that I could say is I love the way I feel when I am with you or I think about you or I regard you. Okay, can we agree on that? That's a substitution. Now, a lot of people don't like it. They say, no, I love you. It's about you I love. Well, yes, it's about you. You don't feel that way with anybody else, so it is that person. I love myself when I am with you or consider you. And when people break up, they could easily say, I miss myself. I miss the self that was with her, that was with him. And in fact, what I do or had used to do in therapy with people, when they would come in after a breakup, is I would remind them that that self that was available is still available. We just have to find it, and it doesn't necessarily need an object. But maybe it does need an object, because you know darn well, if you break up with somebody, right? They talk about on the bounce. You know what I mean? You could fall for somebody else right away. And what does that mean? You found another perfect person? Or does it mean on the rebound that what you really found was the same feeling inside you? You were able to activate it again with somebody else. Maybe because they smelled a certain way. Maybe because they looked a certain way. Maybe because they said they would take care of you. Whatever it is, your feeling of love is your feeling. It's a feeling that you feel in someone else's presence. Now, this is I probably have said this many times before, but it's kind of, I'm trying to drive it home. When you have a friend who breaks up with another friend and feels that they are heartbroken, all you have to do is remind your friend about the wonderful parts of them that they experience. But don't talk about the relationship, because it isn't about the person you loved. I miss the me that was there when I was with you. Imagine if exes called themselves up, called each other up and said that to each other. You know, I miss the me that was with you when we went on vacation together. I miss the me I became. You know, I wish I could be that me in other places, but I just can't find myself doing it. But there's a goal. The goal is to discover the me. Lauren Sykes.
I think that's interesting what you're touching upon of breaking up and then trying to recapture that feeling, because I think a lot of the times people forget that they were half of that relationship. You were half of the love. You were half of the magic. So to put all your worth on that other person, you're denouncing your part, the part that you played in that relationship that you can carry on to the next relationship.
Yes, absolutely, Lauren. But I tell you, I would go a step further. You were all of that relationship. It was all about you, not half about you and half about them. It was all about you because it was your feeling. Now, this is important in our search for the original self or whatever we're going to call it. So when people come to see me and they're depressed and grieving a lost love, my job is to figure out what did they become or allow themselves to be with that other person who's no longer there. Now, if the you that comes out with a new person, voila, the depression lifts. You say, I found a new love. What you mean is, I found me again. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that you're in love, even though you say you're in love. Is that the real you? Now, there's a real question. It may feel real. You know, there's another question that people always have. Is my love real? Is this love real? Is it a real love? Well, that would mean that you're real. And here we go again. I don't know. I'm not taking a vote here. I'm not taking a stance and saying you should be real. I'm not sure about that yet. What I am saying is just because it feels good doesn't make it real. Let's say you're a wrestler and you're in a wrestling ring and you beat the hell out of some other guy. And then you stand up and you raise your arms and you stand on his body and you flex your muscles and you feel perfect. And because you feel perfect, is that the real you? Is the real you the one who is feeding its baby at its breast, at your breast? Is that the real you, or is that some you that has all this chemistry going on that is dictated so that you'll sit in that one spot and not move? Fills you with so much pleasure, and you look at the baby, and you're now having someone suckling on you, and nature provides you with such a bunch of hormones at that moment that you feel blissful. And then you look down and you say, I love my baby. Or do you mean, I love myself when my baby is suckling? Or when I look at my baby, I love myself. Now, of course, everybody's going to say, of course you love your children. I'm not so sure. If you look at most of the people who grew up with damaged parents, you know, the parents didn't love themselves. And therefore, how could they show this regard for the child? Now, I am not saying because you don't love yourself, you can't love somebody else. Because I don't even know if loving somebody else exists. But if your parents never felt like they liked who they were, well, how could they show you that regard? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, talking about being real. And I'm sorry if I'm going to take all this time, because I think it's a really important. The word real almost makes me feel sick. It's like the feeling, it's like the word feel. You know, real and feel with three E's. Tell me what you feel. Tell me what is real. Well, okay, it may feel real, but it could be so many other things that involve you, like an altered personality. You know, just because you're standing on a mountaintop, breathing fresh air, and you're naked to the waist, and you say, ah, this is the real me. How do you know that's the real you? Or is that just the you who's on a mountaintop getting the breeze against your skin and having all these chemical reactions? What if there's a... what if the real you... What is that really like? That's why boyfriend-girlfriend texting is rampant. Why? How does that relate to all of this? Texting has gotten to the point where, as one friend tells me about her office, she works in an advertising office where they all are in cubicles, and she said they spend 75% of their time texting boyfriends and girlfriends. She said they're texting all the time, even though they're supposed to be working. That people are thumbing their cell phones and sending messages back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, especially with mates. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean you're loving somebody on the other side of this? Or does it mean that they allow you to escape? That by considering them, you get a chance to escape. And is your escaping you the real you? Got that question. Is it the you that they... Okay, so now it brings us the big question.
Yeah, I'm looking at this and saying to myself, when we're speaking about that feel-good feeling, what about your dog? What about your cat? People will always say that's man's best friend. It's that feeling of love and anticipation of going home to the dog and the cat and caring for it. Is that love? Is that essence? Is that truth?
Oh, okay, now this is a big question, because we're going to have to go back even before then. Who could you think of, and I'm going to ask everybody out there as I did the people here, if we were going to say somebody is real, like they are really themselves, and that person is really themselves, they're as authentic as you can find, I want you to think of one person who is a known person in the world, famous person, who you would consider to be your real self. Now, consider this for a minute. Who would you consider is an authentic human being, that they present themselves and you say, boy, are they real? What kind of person, what would you think of? So who would be a real self? Any ideas?
I would think of Martin Luther King. I would think of him as an example.
Well, now there's a potent, beautiful, powerful being. Mm-hmm. But when I heard Martin Luther King speak, I didn't hear vulnerability. I heard power. I heard strength. I heard openness. But I didn't hear, it was like a position he was taking. He was a leader, a beautiful leader. But I don't know what the real Martin Luther King was like. I don't know if he was available. Because many people are chosen to be leaders. But it's something funny about being a leader. If you're a leader, it's really hard to just be still. So you got another example?
Oh, gosh. How about Gandhi?
Well, it's the same kind of thing. You know, Gandhi's in this leadership role in his openness. Is he authentic? Well, I'm sure he was calculating. I'm sure he was thinking when he decided to do a lot of things. He was not being, I mean, was he showing the fear that he felt? Mm-hmm. Do we have to pick them as authentic? I've got a better one. How about Superman? How about Superman is real, right? Superman could afford to be himself. He's strong. Nothing could hurt him except kryptonite, of course. But if he's so authentic, why does he have to keep changing his clothes and hiding his personality? Why does he have to hide it? Why does he have to become somebody else the rest of the time? So that doesn't qualify. So who else is there?
About my dog and cat.
No, you're back to your dog and cat. We got there. How about Jimmy Stewart?
Jimmy Stewart, yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. I want you to know, my friends, that I asked Lauren, who is sitting here, does she know who Jimmy Stewart is? And she said, never heard of him. Right?
Right.
Right? Never heard of him. Gosh. Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Dodd goes to Washington. Right? Jimmy Stewart goes to Washington and hears this politician who is an open, honest, beautiful man. And he is just going to be there. And that's what happens to him in Washington. He runs into the fact that he is an honest guy. You got to get this video and watch it, Lauren, just so you can know who we're talking about. And he presents this self that suffers through the pains, but is fighting for reality. The same Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life, where he presents this innocent, open side of himself. Now, could we say that that character is real? But not even the person, Jimmy Stewart, but how about the character? And I have a problem with it, because the problem I have is, why would he have killed himself? Why would he have gone to jump off the bridge after disappointing people, even when he had a child he was leaving behind, Zuzu? Remember Zuzu's petals? Yes. So is this a real self, or is this a self who is so used to satisfying people and being kind to people that as soon as he found that he failed at it, he wanted to end his life. You know, he wanted to go off the bridge. Except for the angel coming along, you know what I mean? So I'm not so sure that we could call that an authentic self. Many of you have an idea about who's an authentic self, and I'd like you to call us in with this, because we're going to be taking your calls today as we talk more about this at 212-209-2900. But not yet, not yet. So, of course, here we have to go to your dog, you know, and what you're talking about. We have to say that maybe, if we use the definition of the natural self, and the natural self is the one who doesn't take aspartame. No, the natural self is that the natural self, the one who won't eat any chemicals? No. What is the natural self? The natural self, is that the self that feels safe? Is safety the requirement of the real self? You have to feel safe. Well, wait a minute now. Was Bambi real? Well, you say, yeah, Bambi was real, right? But Bambi wasn't safe. Bambi was alert. Bambi knew. You got to watch out for things around you. You got to be alert. You got to be not comfortably safe. If you're somebody who walks around lollygagging, saying, oh, I'm safe in the world, and you have no cautions, well, that may be real, but it's going to be short-lived real. Somehow, reality doesn't have to do with just being yourself, and it doesn't have to do with just being safe, because safety doesn't exist in the world. Safety is just as safe as we are, but having a regular amount of caution in your life is not such a bad idea, just to include it, and you can still be real. So that brings us to your dog. Now, what about it? Unless they have a bad childhood, like an abusive breeder or an abusive sibling, dogs are pretty natural. They follow two basic rules of life. Eat and don't get eaten, which I keep talking about, all the beings do. And what that means is, I want you to feed me, right? I want you to take care of me. I want you to give me fun. And I want you to protect me. I want to have a home here. I want to be sheltered. That's a dog's basic life. Now, of course, if you cuddle the dog, if you pet the dog likes it more because you set off a whole bunch of chemicals that make that dog feel nice. But if you had to leave that dog alone for a good period of time, and somebody, so does your dog love you is a question, you know? I don't know if your dog loves you. The dog likes the way he feels when he's around you because he gets fed, he gets petted, he gets played with. That's what the dog likes. And if somebody else comes along and feeds him and pets him and takes him out for walks, he's going to like that person too. You know, maybe if they feed him a little more than you, a little better food, if they tickle him just a little more, and they take him out a little more often, he may actually fall out of love with you and in love with the next person. So I think a dog, even though we consider that to be a natural self, I think it's a very responsive self. He's responsive to the stimulus around him, he or she. And so I can't be sure that that's a natural self. Because certainly I remember a man who once said, I wish I could find somebody who loved me as much as my dog did when I was a child. And what he meant was he felt safe, regarded, and cared for. And he wants somebody who can make him feel that way. And the truth of it is he couldn't find anybody to make him feel that way because he didn't feel that way. Because that's all inside you. So that's our story, my friends. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about the real self. And, of course, we're going to be taking your calls about this. Because there's enough in here. Food for thought. You know, real food for thought. Do you keep commanding that somebody be real with you? And can they be real? And does it pay to be real? I mean, what if the real you is hurt? Sad. Does it pay to be that self? Sometimes I think depression is a gift from the gods. Sometimes I think depression sweeps down on people because it's asking them, please, get here on the planet. Stop being so unreal. Please, face your sadness. So depression is not always such a horrible tool. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little music, and then we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
Day. looking for honey. I'm flexible. Oh yeah. Just be for real. Won't you, baby? Be for real.
For real. That's the demand that so many people have had of so many other people, you know?
Yes, Armand, you know, as you were speaking, what came to me was, as a therapist, I have worked for so long trying to help people to define that real self, and now I'm listening and I'm thinking perhaps that doesn't really exist at all.
And maybe it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it doesn't exist. Maybe there's a you that comes around every now and then. Like, if you want to know the most authentic person in the world, who do you think is the most authentic person you could think of? I'll even ask you this one. How about this? Who's the most authentic person on the radio? How about who is the person who's the most real person on WBAI? Who broadcasts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. So you're going to say, hey, I know who we're talking about, Armand DeMille. No, it's not me. I'm not real. This me that you hear on the radio, this is my performing self. This is my teaching self. I work very hard at this self that I bring to you. But this isn't the real me. The real me probably wouldn't even talk on radio. I bring you a part of me, a something of me. But what people imagine I am, it's like, you know, very often I run into people if I'm at a restaurant or something, and people hear my voice, and, hey, are you Armand DeMille? And I say, yes, I'm Armand DeMille. And then anything I do disappoints them because they had an idea of who I am. So if I drop a fork, yeah, you're not supposed to drop forks. You're Armand DeMille. You know, if I get something on my chin, you're not supposed to do that. You're Armand DeMille. No. But of course, I'm not on the air. 212-209 2900. That's our number here, 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, Armand?
Yes.
Oh, my name is Dahlia.
Hi, Dahlia.
Hi. You were talking before about loyalty and love and the example of the dog. And I just wanted to ask a question, which is how much of loyalty is associated with love? And if you love someone, does that necessarily mean that loyalty is involved? Because even though the dog, you know, will love other people, does that make it less about love because he's not being loyal?
Well, let's talk about loyalty for a minute. First of all, clearly you have an issue about being betrayed, right?
Yes.
Right? You can't stand it. Being lied to, Dahlia, is the worst thing that you could find out. You have had dates and relationships in your life where you discovered that that person was not telling you the truth, and it killed you. How's that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. The person was a dog. Well, not really a dog, because if they were a dog, they would have been loyal.
Well, the person abandoned me.
Abandoned?
More about abandonment.
Just left you. Just left you.
Right, just left.
Okay, so here's what we have. Here's what we know. We know that Dahlia was very loving, and she felt a very strong love with a person who was inauthentic. Right? That person was not telling you the truth. Because he wouldn't have just packed up and left. He would have said to you, Dahlia, you know what I don't like about you? I don't like this. Can we talk it over so that we can work it through? That's what he would have done. So a person who's being authentic with you would be presenting to you any disagreements that they may have, including, you know, maybe we can't be together. Was he doing that?
Well, he was being irresponsible and was, I guess, more taken from me than did it purposely. But I think through his bad decision-making, you know, it was sort of not caring about what he was leaving behind, like his family.
So he showed a bunch of disregard all around him. So
right.
The fact that you fell in love with someone who is a ne'er-do-well, you know that expression? Did you ever hear that expression?
No.
It means they don't do well in the world. They treat people badly in general. The fact that you fell in love with him means that you loved the way you felt when you were around him. There was something he did that made you feel really good. Not only just good, and I'm not saying something he did sensually or tactilely. It's just there was something about him that made you feel great inside for the times that you could feel great. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Right, yeah, I do.
Okay, now that you, does that you ever exist at any other time?
Yeah, I think that me exists when I feel loved by
loving. See, again, we have it on the outside.
Yeah.
So, therefore, we know the following. If that exists, if that you exist, Dahlia, when someone is regarding you with affection, then that means it exists. We're just looking for where's the trigger. Right? If we could just get this from you looking in a mirror, right, it would be fantastic. The trouble is that right now you have the trigger on the outside.
Yeah.
And that's what we got to get past.
Well, how do you get the trigger from the inside?
Look in the mirror. Have as much feeling for the one in the mirror as you had for the abandoning guy. And you could find it. You'll find it. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for responding.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Anyway, we have... I'll have to turn off the video.
I'll wait till you turn it off.
No, it's off.
How did you do that?
I was listening on headphones.
I got you. Thank you.
Okay, so anyway, there's a question of consciousness, basically.
Good.
And basically, what lies behind the thoughts, there's a self behind, I mean, there's the thinker, and there's the consciousness behind the thinker that knows the thinker, and there's a whole school of thought, you know, like Eckhart Tolle, and you have had other guests on that talk about these things.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So is that self behind the thinking, the real self? Is that the authentic you? Is that you, or is that just the quiet you? Or is that just the non-thinking you?
Apparently, it's some postulated that it's universal consciousness.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And if you read about quantum physics, they're talking about there's only one universal consciousness. There can only be one consciousness.
Okay, so this is brilliant. Great. What's your name?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, so let's say, here's what you're saying. If we shed all of the non-me's, the hole that I'm going to drop through is the universal void. I'm going to fall through. I am not going to find a real me. I'm going to find an everything and a nothing. Now, this would be a very good reason why people are afraid of it, because it's so vast and so big. You know, it's such a huge thing, Jonathan, that it's like losing yourself. So some people like you and some of the writers you're talking about, they practice abandoning the self, not even abandoning, but relinquishing the self so that they could go through that tunnel to join the universal consciousness. Other people just hold on for dear life. So I'm not in disagreement with you. That may be what the essence is, that there is no real self. The real self is just a tunnel, a pathway, a doorway to your bigger universal self.
Yeah, well, they're saying that the real self is this universal consciousness. That's
yeah,
always
it's
there.
Just, it's something, yeah, it's hard because we're using the word self.
Because, you know, they're saying that the self is really false, and, you know, some people
sure.
say that the self that they're thinking about, that the answer to our own name has been taught, we've been taught to respond to that name, but it's not really the real self.
Right, and the trouble we have with the word is the word self. Self as in ego. That we, you know, maybe the trouble we have is self. Maybe if we change the word to being, it would be a little easier. Because self makes me think of a skin-encapsulated being that is just standing right there in all in one spot. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good observation. Thank you. 212-209-2900. Well, there's, you know, here's the big answer to the question, if it is the answer to the question. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you, Armand?
I'm great.
Great. Hi. I think topic has switched over once again to loyalty and betrayal.
Oh, we got back to that.
It always goes back there. Funny. Anyway, I wanted to ask you, I really value your opinion. I was involved with a man who had concealed information from me, like baggage that I didn't know, and I helped him a great deal with his health. I helped him from foreclosure. I got him the lawyer to sell his property to prevent him from a life of destitution and poverty from a loan. And in the end, he's giving his ex-wife, who remarried, who lived next door, who never loved him, a tremendous amount of money, and he didn't really have to if he goes through with the sale of this property. And I did, like, all the work for a few years, and he didn't offer me 10 cents. I didn't ask for it, though. And then he asked me to pay for this hotel weekend, and then I blew up. Why would a man be loyal to a woman who didn't love him, who married another person who was not that nice? And then the person who, like, saved him from a life of ruin, like, why would he be this way?
That's an awful interesting question. What's your name?
Kathy.
Kathy. So, Kathy, here's my question. Why would you be loyal to somebody who is so treacherous? I mean, you can't say he was that good at hiding it because he had so much baggage that you had to ask yourself the question, how come he has so much baggage? And what was it about him that opened this door to you? Now, here's what I'm saying about you.
Yes, I didn't know.
You are a loving being. I know you're going to say you didn't know.
I didn't background check him. I found out in year 4.
But the entire time you were helping him.
I didn't know that.
You started from day one. You helped him with his suits. You helped him with his clothing. You helped him with his food. You helped him with his health. Wait, before you answer, okay?
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm defensive.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. So Kathy, Kathy found that if she finds somebody who she could help, it accesses the part of her that feels the most loving. You are a giver.
I was looking to help. It's just that it's a reflex, and he needed it, and, you know, I'm a middle child, and I'm of service, but I am actually looking for someone to maybe help me.
Of course. Of course, that's what you have in thought. But what you're used to being is being a server. And you find a loving Kathy in being a server. So what you did was you found somebody who said, go ahead, serve. And then we go a step further. You found the perfect person who's going to turn you back on yourself. Because when he betrayed you, when you uncovered all these other things, you found out, oh my God, I've been loving a shadow. Now what you have to do is realize that the shadow was there and let go of the shadow so you could find yourself again. You're not going to find yourself by understanding him and his motives. That's keeping the focus on the outside. You too need the mirror.
Well, the thing is that what really made me angry was when he asked me to pay for the hotel, and then I wanted to actually kill him.
The entire time. But the trouble is, at the same time that you wanted to kill him, you even thought about killing yourself.
No, not really.
The despondency was so strong.
I think homicide is a step up from suicide.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think it's healthier. I mean, I'm not going to do that, of course, but I don't really suppress my anger because I don't want it to turn to depression, but I feel so used.
I'm so sorry that you used yourself that way. And you have to pardon me, but I have this one lesson that I'm repeating over and over again.
Yeah.
It is you, Kathy, who were loving.
Yeah.
It was him that became an object so that you could access your loving self. And my goal for you is to find your loving self again.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. You know, people do that very often. If only I could understand my mate, then I could continue to keep this feeling I have going. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. How you doing? This is Ensarara.
Hey, Ensarara.
How you doing? How are you today?
Good.
Okay. The only...
There's a hyphen between the two Ras, isn't there?
There's a dash. It's N-S-O-R-A-R-A.
That's what I thought. So there's a pause.
Yes.
When I say your name, I don't say Ra-Ra. I say Ensarara.
Correct.
Great. Thank you very much.
The characters that I thought of as being authentic could be wrong, but I'm thinking of just people in literature.
Sure. Give me one.
There's probably many more, but the first two I thought of was the Mr. Adam in Watchmen and the comedian in Watchmen. Both different, sort of energies, but, Mr. Adam, are you familiar with
Watchmen? No, I'm not. Linda, are you familiar with Mr. Adam? You know Mr. Adam?
No.
No.
Okay, they're superhero characters. It's a graphic novel. Superhero characters, and Mr. Adam is essentially one step up from Superman. Okay, so he has no vulnerability, and he really has no pretense at attempting to hide it from humans. Who, like this girl loves him, and he, part of him can love her, and part of him can work on quantum physics at the same time. And she's like, well, you could. He says, well, yeah, I mean, I can do both. Can't I? He says, I don't like you to do both. And he doesn't try to pretend to be anything less than what he is. Which
what a fascinating concept! Imagine having no vulnerability and being loved by someone else.
Exactly, and not.
What's that like? What do you imagine? I mean, can you imagine having no vulnerability and love? I always thought of love as a form of suicide. I think of love as one of these things where if you allow yourself to do it, you're going to allow yourself to pierce your heart with a flaming arrow if they choose to, and you're just going to open yourself up and say, all right, if that person wants to hurt me, they can, because I'm going to open myself up to them. That's how I kind of consider love. Now, let's imagine we're your guy. You know, your guy in Watchmen. Now, he says, oh, I could love because nothing could hurt me.
And also, again, well, I mean, okay, on the other side of it, which is maybe the same thing, it's what God experiences. We have a lot of problems with God, okay, because God, let's say if there is a God, whatever, will tell you things that you may not want to hear, but that's the truth. And you know, I think, this is my opinion now, we invent a much more human God because we can't really deal with a God that says, well, you know, I really don't care what you do. I really don't have any problems with what you do. I'm not jealous, and I don't really, you know, want you to do this or that. It's like, well, wait, you have to want us to do things. It's, no, it's okay. Do whatever you want to do. It's all okay. And we would have a problem with that. Now, again, the authentic God figure would not. He says, I'm not jealous. I love you, and that's it. And punto. That's all. I love you. You know, no matter what. And so, well, you know, and so we would have
so a there is, but so what we have with that character, that one that you're proposing, is invulnerability again.
Essentially, and the people who love
him. God is invulnerable.
Yeah. People
God
love him.
God can't be hurt.
And the people who love him have a problem. They can't deal with it. They can't deal with him being, you know, not
but that's
vulnerable.
That also
love.
Sounds like you.
Hmm?
It sounds like people's problem with you, too, because as I know you, you're somebody that people can't deal with the fact that you are less vulnerable than most people are because you have good places to put yourself. In effect, you are God.
What I have to do, Armand, is I have to kind of accept that they will not accept me. And once I can get there, it's like, well, I'll say hello to somebody, good morning, whatever, and let's say they don't answer back. And so I tell myself, that's their right.
So you stopped getting lonely?
Yeah, really, I'm not very lonely, no. I think that I'm good with people, and I'm good with being with Ensarara.
I got you. Thanks for calling in. Once again, the big statement. So time for one more call. One more. Let's squeeze it in here. Armand DeMille, hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Can we get this one in? Hi, you're on the air. No, maybe not. Well, that's as far as we're going to go with our calls today. We have just about 45 seconds with you, my friends. Listen, it's a big question, and I would like you to go to the website and thepositivemind.com. But I'd like you, if you want to hear the show, go to WBAI.org, and certainly press that donate button and make a donation to the station. But if you go to thepositivemind.com and send me an email, I would appreciate hearing your responses to this, or you could do it on Facebook. I will be back with you Wednesday, tomorrow, at 1 p.m., my friends.